You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
This podcast is being brought to you by Voyage AC.
I know people are running around doing their last-minute Mother's Day shopping, and I just want to tell them all, don't stress. Voyage AC has the most beautiful, elegant gifts imaginable.
Not that I was one of them, but is there anything in particular you'd like for Mother's Day?
Oh, honey, you're getting me a Mother's Day present?
Maybe.
You are the absolute best. And yes, I swoon for anything jasmine cocoa, candles, diffusers, or perfume. Voyage AC is your destination for the perfect Mother's Day gift. Gorgeous candles and so many other gifts like beachwear, diffusers, glamorous masks, face and body products. So how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VOYAGEETCIE.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all our listeners right now. That's 10% off everything you buy.
Yep. All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
And this episode is sponsored by Cute Booty Lounge.
Hey, I know we were just talking about Mother's Day. And for the mom in your life that needs to go from loungy to active to out for the evening, you need to check out Cute Booty Lounge.
So if someone, I'm not saying who, were to get something for you there, what would you suggest?
Is this the same someone that was getting me something earlier?
No.
If you were to get me anything from Cute Booty Lounge, I would be beyond thrilled to get the elevated booty leggings. They really shape your booty and hold everything in place while still being the most comfortable, well-fitting leggings I've ever owned. Cute Booty Lounge is made right here in the USA by women for women. The company is female and minority owned, and they have these super cute patented scrunch butt pockets. There's a cute booty style for everyone. Cute Booty Lounge has you covered. Embrace your body. Love your booty.
And make it even sweeter, head over to cutebootylounge.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off your first order.
That is sweet.
Yep. Head to cutebootylounge.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off your first order.
I'm Adriana Lozada, and I'm the only one in the room promoting intuitive birth. You deserve to have an amazing birth experience. However it is, you can have an amazing cesarean, but you deserve to be heard and treated as an expert in yourself and have a situation where you are in control, know your rights, and you are allowed to make decisions, informed decisions, not coerced decisions, because it's not the circumstances that create the trauma. Is how you are treated. Trauma is in the eye of the beholder as well. So it's how you're treated that will make or break your birth experience.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper. Not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition and be sure to listen every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. Adriana Lozada, hello, how are you?
Hello, very happy to be here.
First question for you. Tell me, what is the most common item people put in their birthing go bag?
The most common item people put in their birthing go bag is, I don't know if there's just one.
Give me a couple.
Yeah, so obviously toiletries.
Right.
Snacks is one that I highly recommend,
mm-hmm.
Especially for the birth partner.
Yes.
And some people, if you're really attached to your brand of toilet paper, then bring that roll because the toilet paper in the hospital is just horrific.
Yes.
Honey, that would be you.
Yeah, I'm so attached to my brand of toilet paper.
I mean, like when COVID broke out, it was like everything I could do to find this thing.
Oh my God. There was an all hands on deck search for it as much as we could. That is something I wouldn't have thought of. And that is great. Thank you for that. I am Laura Cathcart-Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room, special Sunday edition, but I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
So, honey, we're talking about birth, but I'm going to start kind of talking about birth trauma.
Mm.
So birth trauma isn't just about what happens during labor and the birth. It can also refer to how the mother is left feeling afterwards. And sometimes the effect of birth trauma can emerge and continue for some time after you've given birth. At the time of birth, you might have felt fearful, helpless, or unheard. After the birth, it's possible to feel shocked, guilty, or numb, even experience panic attacks or anxiety. And we've had two incredible guests that have come on and told us about their own traumatic birth experiences. We had Bliss Biesinger, who was born over a toilet and had head trauma. So she was born traumatically. And then Mia Hempstead, who is a new mom with no advocate in the delivery room. She had an aggressive episiotomy and was not taken care of during the birth of her child. Mm-hmm. Today, as you're listening, is Mother's Day. And to honor this day and what it means, we wanted to talk about birth with advanced birth doula, postpartum educator, child sleep consultant, and podcaster Adriana Lozada. Adriana believes in and advocates for the transformational power of giving birth. She's also a best-selling author, speaker, and creator, and host of the acclaimed Birthful podcast. So welcome, Adriana.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really glad that it's Mother's Day and we're here talking to you about birth. It is the perfect day for this.
Yeah, the perfect day because also, like, the work that I do it for the mothers, for the person giving birth, and not necessarily for the babies. Like, yeah, I love the babies, but I am in awe of the mothers, of the birthers. So this is an honor to be here on Mother's Day.
Oh, I'm so happy. And, you know, when you and I talked before, we kind of went through, you have a lot of only ones. Obviously, we're gonna focus on your work in birthing today, but you were born in Venezuela, you lived in Japan, you lived in Indiana, Montreal and Germany and Brazil, and on a sailboat, is that right?
That is all correct.
So, you know, I know as the new kid, like I moved up to a lot of different schools in the same city growing up. You moved to a lot of different countries. So that's, you've got to have had some really quick adapting and adjusting to do in each place, right?
Absolutely. And so, for example, when we were in Indiana, I was about 8 years old when we moved there. My dad was doing an MBA. So the whole family moved, right? And my parents, bless them, they're in their 20s with three kids and decided to, oh, let's just be students now. which, like, really. But I do appreciate because it gave me the opportunity to learn English and it became a second mother tongue. But yeah, that was by immersion. Like, we're talking many, many years ago. There weren't even ESL classes. It was just, all right, you're in third grade. Here you go.
Learn English. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And blend in. Yeah, no, that's great. Immersion is, like, I think the best way to learn a language and culture anyway, if possible.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah.
We moved around a lot when I was little. And then after high school, I decided to do a gap year. And that's how I ended up in Japan.
Mm, okay.
And yeah. And because of how it was structured through American Field Services, which mm-hmm. is a cultural exchange program. So yeah. I was with a Japanese family and had to go to high school, even though I had already graduated. But it was perfect because I could, there was no pressure. I could just go to school, quote, every day, right? Mm-hmm. And be immersed. And I found with both experiences, the being in Indiana learning English and this one in Japan, it takes about 3 months to even start understanding what people are saying, like where words stop and start.
Yeah, yeah.
And then 3 more months so that your brain doesn't hurt when you speak.
Mm-hmm. How many languages do you speak?
So English and Spanish, okay. Those are mother tongues.
Yes.
And then I can butcher French, Japanese, and German really well.
Wow.
And then Portuguese is so similar to Spanish that one I think I would do the best.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to move away from there and on to the work at hand. And, you know, you said this in the beginning, that you concentrate on taking care of the mothers and their birth partners. But can you just tell me about your experience giving birth to your daughter?
Ah, well, that's what got me into this path. And I think that's very common for many birth workers. It was on paper exactly what I wanted. I, you know, was very type A and set out to take all the classes and read all the books and do all the things. And with my background as a journalist, I was, the more I read, the angrier I got, really, because I realized that the person doing the work, giving birth, is not centered. It's seen almost as a vessel to be delivered of a baby. And, you know, I had the midwives. We didn't have a doula, which my husband will tell you was downright stupid.
Okay. What's the difference between a doula and a midwife?
So the midwife does the same things that an OB would. They do the actually delivering of the baby. The only things that midwives don't do that OBs do is like surgical stuff. So a cesarean or an assisted delivery with forceps or a vacuum, they would need to have an OB come in and do that part.
Okay.
But everything else, they can do well woman health care also. And then a doula doesn't do anything medical. So we provide physical, emotional, and informational support continuous from the onset of labor until after the baby is born. And I think that's the key, that your doula is going to be with you for the long run, continuously. So as shift changes, as doctors leave, as midwives come and go, as nurses change, your doula is there with you. Okay. And you meet several times with her ahead of time. So there's a trust that is built and a connection, and because they work for you, not for anybody else, then they're your number one advocates holding your space.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
So I'm sorry, I interrupted you to ask you that, but you were talking about midwives.
Right, so I had my midwife. We didn't have a doula. That's what I was saying.
Yeah,
We didn't have a doula. That was really stupid. And even though on paper my birth was like what I wanted it to be,
yeah.
Even though my husband was there, my sister and my mother were also in the room visiting from my mom from Venezuela, and my sister was coming from Australia, and it was the most sort of miserable, lonely experience of my life, because nobody had prepared me properly for what was to come. Nobody told me the skills that I excelled at in life of being organized, you know, to type A of achieving and goal getting and being on time and organized like that. None of those skills would help me to actually give birth.
Right.
And I had heard trust your intuition and surrender to the process. But like, who knows how to do any of that? And who wants to surrender?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
So afterwards, there was a lot of processing for me and introspection and trying to figure out why and what was missing and what was the disconnect. And I did want to help people everywhere giving birth. So then I became a doula to help a couple at a time. Mm-hmm. And that was 14 years ago.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. So it was perfect on paper, and yet you were left feeling bereft and lonely and having just like a really uninformed experience. You were not prepared. And you and I talked about this because I had a really similar experience. I don't remember feeling, you know, specifically lonely or miserable afterwards, but I had no idea what was going on. I was definitely not prepared for everything that happened during the birth of both of my sons. And no one, you know, no one had really talked to me about that part, about how I was going to feel. They told me about the mechanics of the birth. But not, and certainly nobody talked to me about postpartum or anything like that.
Yeah, well, it's very easy for us not to prepare for postpartum. We just focus so much on the birth, and yeah. Don't even get me started on that. Like, I have postpartum preparation classes.
Do you?
Because of that.
Yeah.
Because you need to do so much ahead of time to know how to connect with the baby, to figure out the baby you got, how to maybe mourn the baby you had in your head that doesn't match the one you had.
Yeah.
Also mourn the ideal of a mother that you were going to be that is not the one that you are in the moment, and that's, you know, developing. And so, yeah, postpartum, whew, we could talk so much about that. But regarding the birth itself, I think the problem is that the way we talk about birth, we talk about it from the medical point of view without realizing. We explain the process in centimeters and dilations and checkpoints and, you know, all these measurements that really your body could care less about because your body does physiology. And so the trick there, I think, is if you learn how to support your own physiology and understand what that connection and what you can do that is within your control, then the birth experience is extremely different because it doesn't feel like something that happened to you. It feels like something that you were a part of and you were leading.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what you help women or mothers to find, which is really beautiful. During the pandemic, there's been an uptick in home births. Do you prefer for your clients a home birth, or are both options hospital or home?
Yeah, and I support births wherever they happen. So I've done home births and scheduled cesareans and everything in between. And ultimately, I don't care where people give birth, but it has to be a place where they feel safe, supported, and loved.
Right.
Because that's what physiology asks of you. Like, you need oxytocin to flow so that the contractions come. And contractions are not going to come if there's no oxytocin. And oxytocin is the hormone of love. It's like sort of like the nemesis of adrenaline. So if you're in a situation that is stressing you out, you're going to have a really hard time birthing.
Interesting. So Scott and I just watched that movie, Pieces of a Woman. Vanessa Kirby was nominated for Best Actress for it. Did you see it?
I did not see that. I've heard about it, but I did not see it.
Yeah, it's fiction, but it's based on a real 2010 case where an Hungarian midwife was taken to court for championing home births and was seen to be at fault in the death of a baby that was born at home. And I was going to ask you if you thought that she did anything wrong, but since you didn't see it, we'll have to have that conversation again.
But I do know the case itself.
Yeah. Oh, you
midwife
do?
Midwife in Hungary. Yeah. I can't remember her name right now.
Agnes Gareb.
Yes.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. It's a cultural disconnect. Giving birth at home is not any safer than giving birth at a hospital. And hear me out. The problem is how the system is set up, how the healthcare system is set up in the U.S. does not work to support home births flowing smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's take, for example, what happens in Europe and specifically in the U.K., they have a system set up where you have a midwife at home and that midwife coordinates really well with the hospital in case it's needed. Mm. So transfer protocols and continuity of care happens very smoothly. Everybody's listened to and heard. And here in the U.S., the problem is that continuity of care doesn't exist. Usually the midwife that has been taking care of this person throughout their pregnancy and has all the information of their files and their, you know, health history and all that, there's no clear handover of that information. And there also tends to be a judgment.
Yes.
And a how dare you.
Right. There's a stigma.
Be irresponsible in birth at home, which is very shameful because what ends up happening is we know birth has risks, right? There's no risk-free birth. Bad outcomes are going to happen, right? So it's more about your risk tolerance. But if a baby, say, dies in a hospital, people say, oh my God, I'm sure they did all they could.
Right.
Yeah, and you poor thing. And, you know, there's the appropriate level of compassion. And there is even a sympathy for the caregivers saying, I'm sure they did all they could.
Mm-hmm.
If you birth at home and the baby dies, then it's how dare you put yourself and your baby at risk, and it is your fault.
Yeah.
When babies die in hospitals all the time. So it's, I mean, I'm simplifying this conversation. It's an extremely nuanced conversation, and there's many deep ways we can go into it. But villainizing hospital births, just because culturally that's what we've sort of been taught to do, is, I think, selling ourselves short.
I love the way you put all of that, because it's true. There is a stigma, and I've had that judgment. You know, I've had judgment against people having their babies at home. I've categorized them differently. You know, I have an idea in my head that if they cared enough, they would be in a hospital. And I'm starting to change that opinion. The first time I really thought about it was when I talked to you.
Mm.
And just heard what you had to say about it. And then hearing you say that absolutely has given me another shift. And I hope that anybody who's listening can keep their mind open enough to not rush to judgment and not stigmatize and really look at the facts, like you said.
Yeah. And if we look at the research, the Birthplace Lab does amazing research around place of birth,
mm-hmm.
right? And it has great statistics and outcome measurements. And in terms of also, you were talking about trauma at the beginning, about the experience of how people feel and if they feel mistreated and what levels of mistreatment happen. And it's, I think it was 1 in 6 people reported feeling mistreated, and the classifications of mistreatments were like being shouted or scolded at, the violations of their body and autonomy, being coerced or forced to have a procedure that they didn't want to.
Right.
Also not being heard or dismissed about their pain. And I can't remember what the other ones are. There are a couple more. But and of course, the outcomes are worse for people of color and Black and Indigenous. So mm-hmm. what we have to understand, if you look at that research, the people often say, like, oh, my goodness, but if something bad happens at home, the time to get you to the hospital, that's the problem. And that's not the problem. If you have a midwife that coordinates well within the system mm-hmm. and the system coordinates well with her, the distance doesn't matter. Because even if you're in the hospital, there's a difference between an urgent cesarean and an emergency cesarean. And the thing with birth is you can see it topple. You can see things start to go sideways. So home birth midwives, I find that are super sensitive about the risk because they're taking on all the responsibility. So they tend to be more risk averse of I think we should move into the hospital kind of thing. By the time immediately they call and gets things going, the wheels rolling, is about the same as when at a hospital, the same thing happens. The doctor says, you know what, let's talk and yeah, let's have a cesarean. And people, it takes about the same time right. by doing the consent, So in terms of getting into the OR, the timing is not that different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now I just want to talk about some of the births that you've experienced as a doula. Tell me, what do things like throwing up and shaking and bleeding mean during those births? Are those signs that you need to go to the hospital?
Those are all great signs that you're giving birth and things are progressing. So throwing up is just a par for the course, nausea and throwing up, because your uterus is contracting really hard and the baby might be, you know, it might, the fundus, the top of the uterus might be pushing up into your stomach, right? So there's that force of nausea, but that can be a good sign that you're moving along and getting closer to active labor or inactive labor and transition, ready to push. Having some bloody show means your cervix is opening up.
Okay.
So a little bit of blood is great. It's a great thing. The shaking. Oh, my God. That's your hormones working really hard. And also, it's a part of a protective mechanism of your body releasing stress hormones to lessen the trauma to your body.
Interesting. I shaked a lot. I was shaking uncontrollably.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was too, but
you were too. Incontrollably.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and it feels like, because those are things like if all that happened, you know, on a normal day, not being pregnant, if I started shaking and throwing up and bleeding, I would go to the hospital. But you're saying these are all signs during the birthing process that your body is doing what it's supposed to do.
Well, and that's the thing about the physiology. We don't tell people what the physiology that's happening in their body is all about. We focus on, did you know what the risks of an epidural are? Or here are some comfort measures. But what is actually happening in your body? Mm-hmm. These things aren't told so much. Like, for example, I know people that tell me, nobody said to me that once your water breaks, you keep making water and you keep leaking the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, for example.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, or that your water doesn't have to break. Or we know so much about the actual process. And here's the thing. I think we too often hand over the process.
Right.
The professionals, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And they're medical professionals. They're experts if things are not going as they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Right? When something's up, yeah, you want to have these professionals there. But you are the expert in your own body, and I wish people were treated that way. Mm-hmm. You're carrying this baby 24/7 and know more than anybody else what their nuances are, when they move, when they don't move, where they hang out in your belly, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Tell me, what are the best positions for pushing? And I'll tell you why I'm asking, because in movies and on TV, you always see women on their backs with their legs up in stirrups. And my family and I went to Senegal 2 summers ago, and women there give birth in a squatting position. Like that's the most common way to give birth there. And I know that in different cultures, it's done differently. So I'm curious, what are the best positions? Or is there more than one position, and what are they? for pushing?
And I think the best position for pushing is, well, first of all, usually people get in several positions during pushing.
Right.
It's a process that's long enough that you don't just stick around in one and baby just shoots out. Not necessarily.
Right. Unless you're really lucky.
Yeah. But I find that a lot of people like hands and knees. A lot of people, I personally really like for cultures that don't have the custom of squatting because our legs can't really, are not used to squatting. So it's a hard position to hold. Mm-hmm. Getting down like on one knee, like a proposal, that's a really solid, grounded position that allows for a similar space in your hips as squatting does.
Yeah.
And the flexibility of if you want to switch from that to hands and knees, you just put the leg down. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to open more of the pelvis size, you just lean back and kind of, you know, move your butt towards the foot that's on the bed.
Yeah.
Or usually it's on the bed. Yeah. You can lean on your partner or lean over the bed so there's some support. But rather than focusing on a position, what I like to do is focus on getting to experience the fetal ejection reflex, right? The uncontrollable urge to push. So it's similar to like when you say, follow me here. When you have to have a bowel movement, you're like, I'm a little uncomfortable. And I'm sure if I went, I could do something, but it wouldn't be very satisfying or productive.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
As opposed to, it's coming. And if I don't get to a bathroom right now, right? Like that can't but push, can't but poop sensation. It's the same for birth. You want to get to that can't but push sensation.
Yes.
Very rarely does the medical system let birthing people get to that on their own. Because we've got this ridiculous milestone of an idea of the goal is to get to 10 so that then you can push. And we focus on, are you 10 yet? Or am I 10 yet? The goal is to have a baby, not to get to 10. And in fact, getting to 10 just opens the door, but the lower uterine segment is still holding that head. And part of the physiology is the head, when it comes into the pelvis, the inlet tends to be wider side to side. So the head's coming in looking towards the hip, like sideways.
Yeah, yeah.
The outlet is longer front to back. So, and everybody knows these are the cardinal movements of baby. Part of those is that baby needs to rotate and extend the head to come out. If the baby's head has not rotated, but you are 10 and you started to push, you're jamming a square peg into a round hole. And that pushing is going to take forever. And it's going to be you exerting yourself, not your uterus being supported with an immense rush of oxytocin and doing this involuntary movement that you can't control. But you have to just wait until this baby's head rotates, not until you get to 10. It might be an hour later.
Right, right. Wow.
And the crazy thing is we do it for epidurals. It's called laboring down. And people are like, you're 10, no worries, we'll come back in an hour. But if you don't have an epidural, then it's like, no, it's time to push. And let me tell you how you're going to do it. If you do let people have a fetal ejection reflex and get to that point where the head rotates and extends without any external forces being put into it, people, like, the feeling is like, there's the baby. And by the time that head extended, oh my gosh, you're going to have a baby like in 20 minutes.
Wow.
So, or an hour tops is my experience, right? Sometimes it's 5 minutes.
Once you get to that point.
Once that head has cleared, it's like, whoosh, baby is coming.
Exactly.
So then I find if nobody else has been focusing on, are you 10 and telling you how to push, there's a little bit of a rush in the room of baby is coming. And so the providers rush in and they're getting ready to get gowned up. And the birthing person gets into whatever position instinctively goes for them and works well for them because nobody's telling them, get on this.
Right, right.
And then baby's crowning and coming. So there's no time. And I love when that happens because then the providers, everybody's like, did you see what you did? Oh my God, you are amazing.
Yeah,
I wish everybody would birth like that.
Right,
as opposed to the, oh no, this is how birth goes and I'll see you in a couple of hours, keep pushing, which is very discouraging.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is discouraging. It's almost like you failed. You're failing right now. We'll be back when you're not failing, when you're winning.
Right. And somebody else has to tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
Then how you birth does carry on to how you parent.
Absolutely. Last question for you. Your podcast is called Birthful, mm-hmm. and you interview people about their birth experiences. Can you tell us about one story that surprised you?
So at Birthful, I do have people share their birth stories, and I also interview birth professionals, and I've been doing it for 6 years, so you got to keep mixing it up.
Right. Yeah.
I do little shorts where I drop like all this wisdom also. If you like my voice, come and listen to it because you like my rambling.
Yeah.
But the stories, which one surprised me the most? Oh, my goodness. I can't say that there's one. Like, I'm also thinking about the birth stories that I've been present at. And the one that sticks with me the most is this was I was the doula for this person, and she did come on the podcast to share part of it. She was having a birth at a hospital and wanted, you know, low interventions, non-medicated vaginal birth was the goal, and she had some health complications. So that birth ended up being really difficult, long, and traumatic, and ended up in a cesarean. It was not what she wanted. And she had to do a lot of processing through the years until she got pregnant again. And when she was pregnant for the second time, it was really, you know, the amount of work that she put into preparation, mainly processing the first birth experience to get rid of fear. But she decided also that there was no way that she was going back to the hospital, not even with that provider, but just to the hospital because she did not feel safe there anymore. So she was going to have a home birth. So these are called, it's a home VBAC,
right.
Home birth after vaginal birth after cesarean. And she called me around 1 a.m. and I had a hunch, so I got ready. She's like, I don't need you right now, but just wanted to let you know. And I, like, got myself ready because I was feeling this baby was coming quick. And just as I'm about to leave and go, like, park in front of her house to be ready, she calls me and says, can you come? I'm like, perfect timing. Okay, I'm on my way. And when I got there, everything was quiet. She was on the sofa laboring, hands and knees, doing great. And suddenly her water broke. Her water broke, and after a little bit, I was like, do you want to sit on the toilet, which is a great place to labor, by the way, and that way we can get you cleaned up. And so she did. And I can hear her that she's starting to push and like doing little pushy grunts at the top of the contraction, not full out, you know, not fetal ejection, but she's starting to like get there, right?
Yeah.
Help her body. And I ask her, so what about the midwife? Did somebody call the midwife? Like, it's just me and you here and your husband. And no, the midwives are on their way. Let me call them again because I feel and that things are moving quickly. And the husband was filling the tub and was just getting it ready. So she got into the tub and the midwife said, I'll be there in 10 minutes. And she was starting to feel really pushy. So I'm like, please go pa, 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 pa. Which is a great thing to do to minimize pushing. Because you can't, if you can try it, go pa, 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 you can't push while you're doing it.
Oh.
So.
Pa, 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 pa.
Right?
Sorry. Yeah, you're
you
right.
Can't.
Yeah.
Pa, you can't. So pa, 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 that's a great trick. And so then the midwife arrives and starts setting up her things. And I'm like, are you ready? Can she like start pushing now? Because she's been pa-pa-pa-ing for, and she's like, oh yeah, go ahead. We're good, whatever. It's like, okay, you can do whatever you want. And so she did, and she was just going for it. And can I swear in your podcast?
Yeah.
Okay. She's laboring and really deep and having all those sounds that come gutturally and naturally from the fetal ejection reflex. And suddenly she's like, fuck. And the midwife very calmly says, that's your baby's head.
Yeah.
That's your baby's head.
Right.
And then ask the dad, do you want to catch the baby? And the dad's like, oh my God, yes. So, you know, hands go into the birthing pool and the baby comes out and then it's baby's passed onto her chest and she's holding her baby and she keeps saying, my baby, I can't believe you're here. I can't believe you're here. Oh my goodness, my baby. And then she looked up at me. Locked eyes and said, that was so easy.
Oh, that's great.
Oh my gosh.
That's
right?
So
like,
great.
That is everything.
Yeah.
I think the baby was born. So I got there, you know, she called me around 1. The baby was born like at 4. So it was only a few hours. But compared to the ordeal she had the first time
yes,
around.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you told that story. That is a beautiful story to end on. And it's just a beautiful story, period. And hopefully for people who are thinking about trying for a baby or pregnant, that story will give them some hope that this is also how birth can be. Mm-hmm. And should be, you know.
Yeah. And that you deserve to have an amazing birth experience. Yes. However it is, you can have an amazing cesarean, but you deserve to be heard and treated as an expert in yourself and have a situation where you are in control, know your rights, and you are allowed to make decisions, informed decisions, not coerced decisions.
Yeah.
Because then it does, the details of the, I've had people have forceps and episiotomies and say that was a really great birth, because it's not the circumstances that create the trauma, is how you are treated.
Yes.
It's in trauma is in the eye of the beholder as well. So it's how you're treated that will make or break your birth experience.
Yeah. So tell me, Adriana, where can people find you?
So definitely Birthful, the podcast. There's, like I said, 6 years of episodes there. So tons of knowledge for you guys to learn. The tagline is inform your intuition. And that's my goal. Birthful.com. You can learn more about what I do, the podcast, and also birthfulcourses.com. I have birth preparation classes focused on physiology happening all the time. And like I said before, the postpartum preparation classes, so that you're ready for what comes after, like your life with your newborn, and you can thrive during those first few weeks.
Oh, so important. So important. I wish that I had known about something like that.
Right. Me too.
Are you on social media?
Yes. It's Birthful Podcast on Instagram.
Okay, great.
And Birthful on Facebook. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. This has been a beautiful Mother's Day, and I'm so grateful that we get to give this to our listeners today. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adriana.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.